afternoon, and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly magazine of the performing arts here in the Bay Area. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, Tom Ross and Joy Carlin will talk about the Aurora Theater Company's homage to one of the most prolific and revered American playwrights of the 20th century, Lanford Wilson. Composer Lisa Bielawa talks about the San Francisco Girls Chorus Concert this weekend. Pianist Igor Levitt talks about his San Francisco Symphony debut performing Mozart. And we'll hear from soprano Morgan Harrington, who was featured in this Sunday's Sing for America Choral Concert Extravaganza at the Palace of Fine Arts. Stay with us. Theater continues its 23rd season now through the 7th of June. The season has been dedicated to American playwrights of the 20th century, Lanford Wilson, and so Tally's Folly, which is the first entry in the series of three interrelated plays known as the Tally Trilogy, is the current offering. Acclaimed Bay Area actress and director Joy Carlin, who played Sally Tally in ACT's 1979 production of Wilson's 5th of July, directs, and she joins me today in studio along with the Aurora's artistic director Tom Ross, who inaugurated an Aurora Theater Company with Barbara Oliver back in 1992. Welcome back to both of you.
Thank you very much.
So nice to have both of you as a return customers here on Open Air to tell more about the wonderful things that are happening at the Aurora. But let's start first with an overview of the very prolific Lanford Wilson.
I lived in New York in the 1980s, and I had the great privilege of seeing both Tally's Folly and 5th of July on Broadway, and as well as Burn This with John Malkovich, and an incredible production that Steppenwolf had done of Balm and Gilead. These are all plays written by Lanford Wilson. And Lanford Wilson is such an important playwright, particularly as a chronicler of the 60s, 70s, and 1980s. And he died 4 years ago. And I was dismayed that more had not been done about it, that people... I would talk to people in theater, and they weren't even aware that he had passed away. Mm-hmm. And so for the past few years, I'd been thinking about how could I honor his work at Aurora. And last year, we did a first production at a little space that we have called in the Dachau Wing. It's a 49-seat black box. And as well as our 150-seat main stage. And it suddenly dawned on me that we could do Tally's Folly, which is a two-character play in the smaller Dachau space, while simultaneously I was directing 5th of July on the main stage, which has eight actors. And then on the Monday nights where we're dark during the run of 5th of July, we could do Tally and Son.
Neat.
Readings of that. And so so that became our homage to Lanford Wilson.
Very nice. Tell us about the characters then that are involved in the trilogy.
The trilogy, how the trilogy works is two of the plays, Tally's Folly and Tally and Son, both take place on the 4th of July, 1944, during World War II, in the town of Lebanon, Missouri, which is Lanford Wilson's actual hometown. And they take place on the estate of the Tally family, which is a very prosperous a textile manufacturing family, the wealthy people in the area. They have a 19-room farmhouse, so that's how wealthy they are. And then 5th of July takes place in the same place, but on the 4th and 5th of July, 1977. So it's 33 years later. And so it's a collection of, in Tally's Folly, well, Joy can maybe tell you about that one, but it's a collection of Tally family members as well as friends.
Let's hear about that, Joy Carlin.
Yeah, well, Tally's Folly is just a two-character play, and Sally Tally, the only member of the family who also appears in the 5th of July as a much 33 years later as a widow, we see how Sally Tally and Matt Friedman, two people of extraordinarily different backgrounds, get together. And that's what Tally's Folly is about this odd couple getting together and being truly meant for each other.
You're directing Lauren English as Sally
right.
Talley, a character that I mentioned you played back a while back at ACT. This is a two-person play, Lauren being paired with Rolf Saxon. Mm-hmm. Had you played Sally Talley in the other play as well, or just in the 5th of July portion?
We never did Tally's Folly at ACT. We did 5th of July in Hotel Baltimore, what was it, the one you mentioned?
Baum and Gilead?
Not Baum and
Gilead. Burn This.
Burn This. Ah, Burn right, This. Right. I remember that very well. It's where Marco Vici met her husband. The two of them were in that play, and they got married. Anyway, that doesn't happen. That does happen once in a while.
I think so.
And so we had great success with Lanford Wilson, and I too think he's really one of our great American playwrights who has a huge number of wonderful plays. There's one I always love, and we should do that, Tom.
Yeah.
Sometime
yeah,
is The Mound Builders.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
He writes about his part of America, the Midwest, and sort of the southern Midwest, the Ozarks or whatever you call them, but Lebanon, Missouri, his hometown. And Mound Builders is a play about archaeology and what they find, the Indians who lived there. And so a very group of... And he wrote for a company, didn't he?
Yes, Circle Rep.
I saw some of those plays. I was living in New York in the late 50s and 60s, early 60s before we came to Berkeley. But
So have you been on stage doing some other Wilson yourself?
I was in Hotel Baltimore.
Right.
And just those two plays we did at ACT. Mm-hmm. And I have directed The Rhymers of Eldridge, which is another terrific mm-hmm. play. I just think it's a wonderful thing to bring him back into a theater lover's memories.
Let's talk about the character of Sally Talley then.
Yeah, well, Sally Talley is the daughter of this privileged, wealthy family, and things that are discussed in Talley's Folly are interesting because Matt is a survivor of the Holocaust. And he's quite a bit older than Sally. He's Jewish. He's definitely a socialist. And everything that her family is rabidly against. And she's the oddball in her family. She's in the play. She's a nurse's aide at a veterans hospital. She's taking care of the wounded who are coming back from World War II. And... Sally and Matt have met a year ago and apparently had, well, we figured out they actually had a consummated affair. that decision had to be made by the actors, whether, you know it or not, but they had to know, well, did we do it or didn't we? Yeah, I think so. So they thought so, too. And he wrote to her constantly over the year, and she never replied, thinking that this was impossible. The two people like that could never get together. Her family would never. She was as attached to her family. They're dear to her, and she knew they would never approve. So the play, which takes place in just about an hour and a half, you understand what they're lives have been. He takes you through his. It takes a while for them to admit what is keeping them apart. But once they do that, it's kind of a psychoanalytical play. Once they clear that out, they see that they were meant for each other.
Hmm.
And so it is a romance. It's called a romance, and that's what it is.
Hmm. Now, I mentioned that you're directing the wonderful Lauren English, who has done such wonderful
yes.
work at
yeah.
SF Playhouse. I yeah. talked with her on air as well.
Yeah.
But you're directing her in a role that you played. So I'm wondering,
no,
are you saying,
I
didn't do it
I
this way.
You're
informing her in some way.
Not really. Not at all, because I played Sally Talley when she was a much older woman. She was in her 60s.
I see, yeah.
And No, we really didn't discuss that very much, no. Mm-hmm. But I love working with Lauren. We love working with each other and all of them. Of course, Rolf Saxon was in After the Revolution a couple of seasons ago at the Aurora, and he's a wonderful actor, too. And the two of them are a terrific and quite well-cast pair. And we thought of them right away, mm-hmm. you know. We asked them, would they do it, and they did. They wanted to.
Joy Carlin, who's directing Tally's Folly at the Aurora Theater. Tom Ross also talking about the juggling going on, presenting the full trilogy.
Yeah.
It's quite a task to keep things, those three going.
Yes, I mean, even for our technical director to have to build two sets simultaneously has been a big task for everybody.
Tell me what's coming up for Aurora the rest of the year and into the next season.
Well, we have one more play after 5th of July. We have one more play called Detroit by Lisa L'Amour. And it's a satire about our perilous economic times. And then we start our 24th season. We have six great plays coming up. I don't have the list in front of me and all the information.
We'll have you on back to talk about that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But I could talk more about 5th of July.
Sure.
Which is open starting on Friday.
Right.
5th of July is an 8-character play. As I said, it takes place in 1977. And I describe it a little bit like a Robert Altman film, in that it's all these people bumping up against each other and overlapping and intersecting over 2 days. It's really a play about the end of 60s activism and moving towards the me decade of the 1970s and then to the greed is good of the 1980s. It's sort of that weird transition point where there was still rock and roll, but disco was also happening. And it's the lead character is a Vietnam vet who's lost his legs in Vietnam, and he's trying to figure out what his future is going to be. And he's visited by a group of his friends from UC Berkeley from the 60s who all kind of rally around him. And they drink a lot and do a lot of drugs and deal with generational issues. And it's very funny. And Sally Talley is in the play. What she's doing in our play is Matt Friedman has died a year earlier. She's got his ashes in a candy box. They're trying to get her to get rid of the ashes so she can move to California. And she kind of refuses to do that. It's got a great cast. There's a lot of music in it. There's a character that's kind of based on Janis Joplin a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's really been fun to work on it.
Nice. 5th of July, Tally's Folly at the Aurora Theater. Aurora Theater with an RE.org for more information. Joy Carlin, Tom Ross, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you
very much.
Look forward to seeing the shows.
Thanks.
Still to come on Open Air, we'll be talking about the debut performance of Igor Levit at the San Francisco Symphony. We'll hear more about the Sing for America Choral Concert Extravaganza at the Palace of Fine Arts. And from Lisa Bialawa about the San Francisco Girls Chorus performing part of this work.
Be turned, be filled, be peace and gain.
That's a brief excerpt from German-Kurdish composer Ralph Yusuf Gawlick's Kinderkreuzzug, or Children's Crusade. This weekend, the five-time Grammy-winning San Francisco Girls Chorus will present the West Coast premiere of that work, based on Bertolt Brecht's moving account of a group of war orphans who band together to collectively survive the hardships inflicted on them in a search for a land of peace. The program, conducted by San Francisco Girls Chorus principal conductor Valerie Saint-Agathe, will also feature Lily Boulanger's ethereal and stunning Pie Jesu, and the world premiere of a new arrangement by Philip Glass and the chorus's artistic director Lisa Bialawa of Glass's Father Death Blues, setting of Allen Ginsberg poem of the same name. Lisa, a former Girls Chorus member herself, joins me in studio to talk about the concert. Welcome back, Lisa.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
This is a pretty heavy concert.
Yeah, I think so. It's a concert that has absolute need of young voices mm-hmm. to address this sort of topic.
Sure. So, what brought the inspiration for these three works?
Well, I think, you know, encountering Ralph Gawlick's work, I knew Ralph already because, not well, but I knew him because I founded and curated the MADA Festival with Philip Glass in New York for years, which is a festival, an annual international festival of young composers. So we had a call for scores. Hundreds of scores come in every year. And in fact, the festival's happening right now in New York. I'm missing it. But every year we hear from composers from around the world, and I remembered Ralph's work, chamber work back then, totally unrelated to this. So when I was appointed to the Girls Chorus as AD, I reached out, I cast a very wide net, and I reached out to composers from all over the world that I thought might, you know, be interesting in this new artistic context, and he sent me this piece. And Valerie and I took a look at it, and we thought, wow, this is really something special, and I learned that it had not yet had a West Coast performance, so this will be the West Coast premiere. So that's how it started. And then weaving the program around it, I had always hoped that we could do something special. Philip Glass and I, with whom I worked for years, that we could do something special just for the girls, and this seemed like a really great match. Two great poets, you know, Bertolt Brecht, Allen Ginsberg, both writing about death and in ways that really call for young voices
right,
to explore.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me first, the Bertolt Brecht's words that are being used,
yeah.
Where they're pulled from and how.
It's actually an epic poem of his from 1941, I believe it is. So it was written when the Second World War was not even really, you know, had not even reached its most terrible proportions. And it was a kind of an exploration of a kind of an apocryphal story he heard about a group of children, 55 of them in his story, who just kind of come together from the various burned villages of the all across Poland, from different backgrounds, you know, children of Jewish, you know, Jewish children of Nazis, you know, who were all left orphaned,
right?
Found
right.
each other, French children, you know, found each other in Poland and took care of each other, adopted a dog. Didn't eat the dog, instead sent the dog out into the world with a placard saying, please help us, you know, come find us. And that segment that you just heard is actually the very end where they find the dog, you know, a year and a half later with this placard. We
wow.
don't know exactly what that means, but mm-hmm. so this was one of the point of the poem, I think, you know, in reading it, seems to be not actually political. It seems to be focused on what the plight is of young people in war-torn countries, in strife-torn parts of the world. And this is something that I know Ralph, the composer, and all of us also are interested in taking a look at as an organization that engages young people, young women, young girls, and their families. And I think it's something that this is why to do serious programming with an organization that's integrated into community and families.
So important to realize that these conflicts are happening now.
That's
right. It's not a matter of just looking into the past.
That's
right. There's so much hardship. There's so much hurt.
Yes, that's
right. And
pain
for children right now all over the world.
That's right. And if people come to the concert a little bit early, we decided that instead of having some kind of pre-concert talk or something, because this is, you know, let Brecht, you know, and Ginsberg do the talking, right? But we have curated a slideshow of images from around the world. Judith Mayer has been our curator for that, and Jeff Capps is a filmmaker. So you'll be able to see just sort of silently, you know, in the minutes or so as you find your seat, you'll be able to see some images from around the world and from all different times in photographable history and from all geographic areas that sort of consider the not just the plight, but the resilience of children and the way and young people and how they respond to these kinds of to being orphaned through these kinds of conflicts.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about your arrangement then of Glass's Father Death Blues. How has it changed for this particular concert?
It's pretty different actually, and I think that's mostly because of how Philip is about things like this. He's never just doing an arrangement of something. He's always interested in what his ideas are now. You know, when we're doing sound checks, I sing with the Philip Glass Ensemble, and I have for years. And, you know, when we're doing sound checks for a gig or something, he's always noodling around with something new. He's always interested in something new. So we worked on this together on tour. We were on tour in the UK in the fall, and we just kind of backstage, we just made this, you know, we thought about this as a possible way to look at some subject matter, too, that would be a good partner to Gallic, but also just something that would sound beautiful with this particular these particular forces. It was originally a sextet of soloists, men and women, in the context of Hydrogen Jukebox, which is, you know, which is the theater piece that it's taken from. So we just did it together backstage, and as we were doing it, he just came up with all kinds of new ideas that have nothing to do with the previous version. So it's pretty different.
The concerts are on Friday at 8 at First Congregational Church in Berkeley and Sunday the 19th at 4 o'clock here in San Francisco at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. Lisa, a prolific composer yourself, I think last time we talked about the massive Chrissy
yes,
project that
that's
was going
right.
on.
Chrissy Broadcast.
What
yeah.
else is on your plate these days?
Well, I just launched a project that actually, even though its home is in Santa Ana, it had the Kronos Quartet and the San Francisco Girls Chorus involved in it. I'm doing an opera. I'm creating an opera that's being released serially as a television series. So, like, it's, you know, it's an original series, except it's an opera.
No soap involved.
Yeah, exactly. So it's with KCET, which is a station, an independent TV station down in L.A. So the first two episodes are now up on the KCET website, and you can check it out. But Kronos was down there; they're on camera. They were in makeup, and you know, they're sort of part of the characters, the scenery. You know, so I'll be working on that for a while, a couple of years. It's ambitious and horizontally, rather than vertically. Mm. It's going to involve as many people as Chrissy Broadcast eventually, but not, you know, but it'll take 2 years to roll it out. So.
Well, where can we learn more about all things Lisa Bialawa?
Probably at lisabialawa.net.
Okay, lisabialawa.net. Yeah. Great. And the San Francisco Girls Chorus site, sfgirlschorus.org.
That's right. Yeah.
Performances on Friday and Sunday of the German-Kurdish composer Ralph Gaulick's Kinderkreuzzug, or Children's Crusade, along with a stunning exhibit that you'll be able to see. San Francisco Girls Chorus, directed by principal conductor Valerie Saint-Agathe. Lisa, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
That's pianist Igor Levit performing music of Bach from the second movement Allemande from Bach's Partita BWV 825, which he recorded recently for Sony Classics. He'll be making his San Francisco Symphony debut this week, a season which also sees debuts with the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra, next week in fact, the HR Symphony Orchestra, which is the radio orchestra of the Hessischer Rundfunk, the public broadcasting network of the German state of Hesse, and with the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra. Igor is prominent on the solo concert scene as well, with many solo recitals on the calendar, and London's Wigmore Hall dedicating an introductory series to Levit this July that will feature three solo recitals throughout the season. His debut disc of the last five Beethoven sonatas won last year's BBC Music Magazine Newcomer of the Year Award, as well as the Echo Classic Solo Recording of the Year, one of the best established and most well-known music awards in the world. Igor began playing piano at the age of three, and tonight, at the ripe old age of 28, I believe, at the Green Center at Sonoma State University, he will perform another well-known music prodigy's music, Mozart, and Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 9, Kerschel 271, known as the Jeune Homme, with Pablo Carrascosado leading the San Francisco Symphony, a program that also includes music of Haydn and Debussy and will be repeated here in San Francisco at Davies Symphony Hall on Saturday and Sunday. Igor, welcome to Open Air.
Good to be here.
And welcome to San Francisco. I understand this is your first visit.
Yes, my first ever visit to San Francisco and even to California.
Wow, thank you for bringing such lovely weather.
Well, I can tell. Fantastic, yeah. Although the weather in Germany was way worse.
Really?
Yeah.
Going back there, though, shortly, I'm sure.
Well, it's good now that I left, so seems to be.
Well, it's times like this that I wish I had a piano in this room, and I have to apologize for not having a piano in our studio. I'd love to hear you play as a part of this talk, but I'm looking forward to hearing the performance. You were born in Nizhny Novgorod in Russia, which through the miracle of Google Maps, I learned is about 6 hours east of Moscow. How long were you in Russia before beginning your musical life in Germany?
Well, when we left Russia, I was just about 8 years old. So, and I haven't really been back since. So, you know, we were there. I've been back once for a week. So my emotional bands aren't really very, you know.
And so there's not that much of a cultural bond to Russia then either.
Well, obviously there is, of course, because of my parents. But let's say, regarding self-experience, there is almost none.
Hmm. Now, I mentioned that you started playing at the age of three in the introduction. Were you just showing a musical proclivity at that time, or was it something obvious early on in your life that's what you wanted to do?
Well, I heard music at home. I mean, my sister played at that time. My mom is a musician. So I don't know, but you know, I don't really remember my thoughts while being 3 years old. So, so you know, I just began to play, and I never stopped till today.
And most of your study was at the Hanover Academy of Music, Theater, and Media.
Exactly.
And I should mention that you graduated from there with the highest academic and performance scores in the history of the institute.
Yeah, which was quite interesting to get these this news. It was funny. No, Hanover has and always had a remarkable piano department. I would say that at a certain time, it was by far probably the best piano department worldwide. So and unfortunately, during the last years, many of the highly acclaimed great teachers died. You know. But it's still, I mean, it's a remarkable conservatorium.
So when did you begin to compete and start winning some of these awards? I noticed that you were the youngest ever participant in the 2005 Arthur Rubinstein competition in Tel Aviv.
Well, I haven't really participated in too many. Certainly Arthur Rubinstein was the biggest one I have participated in. And so that was about 2005. And since then, I haven't really taken part in any serious competition. So you know, it all just happened step by step.
I was going to say, who would you consider your mentor through this process of now you have a full-on career?
Well, I have to be honest, there are many, and among them for sure not only musicians who I would consider being mentors. I mean, it's just you know, just about close people, friends, and certainly there were, you know, all my teachers were mentors, but my very one of my two very closest friends, he's in Germany. He's a lawyer, and he's for sure also a kind of mentor. You know, it's just about the people you're surrounded by, and sure. they do have a strong influence on me, and I think I do have an influence on them.
So. Do you have some favorite pianists that you emulate or that you admire for certain styles or certain composers?
Well, I certainly do. There are certainly pianists who I admire a lot, like Richard Good is one of them. Andras Schiff is one of them. And of course, from the old times, certainly I don't have to mention too many names, but where could I start? But, you know, it really depends on which repertoire, what's my mood during the day. And then sometimes even there are recordings which I love absolutely, and then a year later I think it's not my piece of cake anymore, and then I might come back or not. So mm-hmm. It really changes.
Bach figures prominently both in your repertoire and with your recorded repertoire. We heard a brief Bach excerpt to start things off. Are there composers that you are not yet completely comfortable performing, or composers that you're looking forward to spending more time with?
Oh, certainly there are composers who I love, but I wouldn't perform. Like, funny enough, most prominent probably is Frédéric Chopin. I simply think that there are other colleagues, admired colleagues, who are just simply better in that than I am. Mm-hmm. So, by you know, and there's so much repertoire, I don't have to play it all, and so he's a prominent example of a composer who I admire incredibly, but who I wouldn't bring on stage.
Mm-hmm. Bach and Beethoven are part of your recorded legacy already here. What's a future recording project you're looking forward to?
Well, I'm now in the middle of a very demanding but for me great recording project, which I was planning already from day one when Sony Classical and I when we began our collaboration, so which is kind of a compendium of what we already started. So it will include three of what I think the greatest piano variation cycles ever, which is obviously Bach's Goldberg variations, Beethoven's Diabelli variations, and an incredible piece by an American composer who is still very much alive, his name named Frederick Shevsky, and it's Frederick's incredible variation cycle on the Chilean protest song El Pueblo Unido, which is the people united will never be defeated, which was a very well known, still is, song, which became kind of an anthem at the protests against Augusto Pinochet in Chile. And Frederick has wrote this magnificent piano piece based on this song. So these three, and this piece is from 1973, I believe. So these three cycles I'm just about to record.
Well, that's an interesting combination, that's for sure. Now, last year you jumped in at the very last minute for a replacement for concerto appearances by Maurizio Pollini and Alain Grimaud. That must be a really interesting experience.
Well, the Pollini experience was especially interesting because there was not only last kind of overnight jump in. It was literally a thing when I was having a cake in Hanover, spending you know some good time with my friends. It was about
hopefully not too good of a time.
Well, it was 2 p.m. So it was 2:30 p.m. And then I got a call from Vienna saying, would you be willing to fly to Vienna? And I said, why? And then they said, well, you know, Pollini has just canceled his recital. And so I asked, so when's the recital? And they said, it's tonight.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, is there any possibility you can fly me in but on time? And they said, well, there's one flight and you would arrive, if everything's on time, you would land in Vienna an hour before the concert. So would you do that? And I said, so I finished my cake and I said, well, I would do it, but then you got to let me play whatever I want.
Oh, so it was a recital appearance.
It was a recital appearance in the big hall of the Musikverein in Vienna.
Oh, my gosh.
So what I played
And first time playing there as well?
first-time solo recital. Uh-huh. So what I did was to perform the last two Beethoven sonatas and Frederick Chevsky, People United, giving the Vienna audience a hard, you know, a hard cookie to eat. But they were it was an incredible experience.
Great.
So, you know, there was some kind of an unforgettable thing for sure. Mm-hmm.
And for Alain Grimaud, who's been a guest on my show,
there was
as well.
A few weeks before, funny enough, in Vienna. There they called me a day before to play Beethoven's fourth piano concerto, which is also in the Musikverein. Mm-hmm. So we've got some kind of replacement history.
Well, I guess that's why you were on the short list for the call. That's great. And the audience knew you, too, probably from that earlier performance. Fantastic. Now, these concert seasons, just speaking about cancellations like that, are planned well in advance, years and several years when it comes to opera singers and such. Now, tell me about the process. Once you're engaged for an appearance, do you first offer something that you're also performing elsewhere, or maybe do you keep a couple of concerti that you're currently working on in your fingers, so to speak, and propose those first?
But there are certainly several philosophies how to do it. Some of my colleagues just simply say, okay, these are the two concerti I'm playing, and let's say this one recital program, and I'm playing that all over the season, wherever, for whoever, with whoever, and that's fine. And you can plan your season that way, which is absolutely okay. But it's not my way. Because I do really, I mean, I do care about what the other side kind of is planning. So it is interesting. It is quite interesting to know what a certain promoter thinks, what a certain orchestra is really good at, where they feel strong.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make any sense to give them something. Like, it wouldn't make any sense to ask me to play Chopin concerti. You know, it's just a lose-lose situation, basically, in the end. So I really think that we should all kind of listen to each other. And then it depends. And then one makes decisions, you know, regarding programs and timings and logistics, etc.
Right. Well, from here you pop down to L.A. for a recital at the Wallace Annenberg Center for music of Bach, Prokofiev, Beethoven, and a work by Ronald Stevenson, his Fantasy on Peter Grimes, which I'm fascinated to hear. A program that you'll also take to Washington, D.C. and to Kalamazoo next month.
Yes.
A very full schedule. Do you have much time to spend in these cities that you drop into? Some of which you probably wouldn't want to spend
more time. L.A. this time, unfortunately not. Washington, I will spend a few days. Uh-huh. I have very, very close friends there.
Right.
So I also stay at their house, and we haven't seen each other for quite a bit. But usually I do have time. And in the end, I take my time.
Right.
You know, whenever I kind of feel that I need it, I take it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ask for approval. Mm-hmm. So I just do it.
A favorite stop or city recently?
Well, I don't know. My favorite place to be is certainly home.
Which is Hanover now.
Which is Hanover. But, you know, I'm very often in Berlin because very close friends are there. I'm very often in London. And, you know, so it really depends.
Mm-hmm. The Mozart that you're playing, the Concerto No. 9, written by a 21-year-old Mozart in 1777, the musicologist Charles Rosen has called it perhaps the first unequivocal masterpiece of the classical style. Pianist Alfred Brendel called it one of the greatest wonders of the world. And Alfred Einstein...
I couldn't agree more with him.
Alfred Einstein dubbed it Mozart's Eroica. What makes this piece so special? It's fairly early in his repertoire.
Wow, that's a question. Well, probably just about everything from Bar 1 to the last one. You know, it is one of the greatest wonders. Hmm. It is an absolute miracle. It's a unique piece of work by such a young man. It's just unbelievable in all aspects.
Hmm. Nice.
I couldn't point one out.
Well, we wish you performances of Splendor at the Green Music Center. It's a beautiful space. You'll really enjoy that. That's tonight at 8. Saturday, he's back here in San Francisco at 8, and Sunday at 2 for a matinee It's Pablo Heras Casado conducting the San Francisco Symphony. Also on the program, Haydn Symphony No. 44, Debussy's Prelude à l'après-midi d'enfant, and Stravinsky's Symphony in Three Movements. Igor Levit in his San Francisco Symphony debut performing. Igor, thanks for taking some time today.
Pleasure.
More information about what Igor is up to is at his website, igorlevit.com, igorlevit.com. We'll go out with a cut from your highly lauded Beethoven recording I mentioned in the introduction. Here from the Beethoven Piano Sonata No. 28 in A Major, Opus 101. Available for a taste at your website or in its entirety from Sony Classics. Music of Beethoven, performed by Igor Levit.
Thank you.
the Beethoven side of pianist Igor Levit. He'll be performing Mozart this weekend with the San Francisco Symphony, tonight at the Green Center in Sonoma County, and Saturday at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 2 at Davies Symphony Hall. Pablo Eras Casado conducting. Information at sfsymphony.org. Good afternoon, David LaTulipe with you for Open Air, our weekly performing arts magazine of the air. Well, award-winning soprano Morgan Harrington includes the Cinnabar Opera Theater, Quantum Opera Theater, Sonoma City Opera, Pocket Opera Theater, and the Sonoma Valley Shakespeare Company, among her many credits. She also appears frequently in recital, offering both traditional and contemporary works, including an occasional premiere. She's one of the featured singers this Sunday evening as Sing for America presents its annual choral extravaganza. Morgan Harrington, welcome to Open Air.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for taking some time today. Well, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, the brains behind the organization Sing for America, Eric Stratman, was on to talk about the unique way that Sing for America raises funds for its singing members' charity of choice. How does that work?
Oh, it's a fantastic idea. They bring together a volunteer choir. Each of the members choose a specific organization or cause as their beneficiary, and then we all come together for a concert after 10 weeks of rehearsals to raise funds for these organizations through singing, so using the arts to support the arts.
Last year alone, over $110,000 was raised in this way for a variety of causes. It's fantastic.
Yes, they've been doing a wonderful job, and it's such a delightful program that they've put on for this year, and I'm really excited for all the good that they're doing in our communities.
Well, you're one of the featured singers, along with friend Cliff Romig and Adam Flowers, Martin Bell as well. Eric's going to sing a tune.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of, all under the baton of Brett Strader. It's quite an ensemble that's going to be here. How many singers are about in the chorus this time around?
Oh, goodness. I would say
ballpark figure.
About 40.
That's great. Right. Also, special guests that are going to be involved in this performance include the great singer-songwriter Livingston Taylor. That's going to be a real treat.
We're very excited, and also incredibly excited to perform with the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir under mm-hmm. the baton of Terrence Kelly. And
some light moments being added by a trio of guys called the Hearts of Romaine.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited to see them.
Audience people should go for that alone. This coming Sunday evening at the Palace of Fine Arts, singforamerica.org for more information. Well, let's hear a little sample of the skills that you'll be bringing this Sunday night. You're going to be singing Cunegonda's aria, right?
I'm going to be singing Cunegonda solo in the Make Our Garden Grow.
I see. Oh,
piece.
Great. That wasn't available for us for karaoke purposes.
No, I cannot find it, indeed.
You were kind enough to bring an excerpt of one of my favorite tunes. I'm glad you brought it. Tell us why you brought this song and what it means to you.
Well, I brought the If I Love You song from Carousel. And the reason I chose this piece was I'm going to be performing it on May 25th in Monterey for the Monterey County Pops. And then we're also going to be doing a wonderful version of You'll Never Walk Alone, which will be sung by the fabulous soprano Nicole Folland at the Sing for America concert. So I thought I would tie those two together with some wonderful Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Nice. Well, here's a live performance. If you want to stand up for that, that's great. As I settle things into our performing studio, transformed magically through radio, here is Morgan Harrington singing If I Loved You.
Try to say all I'd want you to know. If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way. Round in circles I'd go.
chances pass me. Of day, never to know how I loved you. If
beautiful, beautiful singing, Morgan
Thank
Harrington.
You.
I'm getting all teary-eyed here at Open Air here on a Thursday afternoon, thanks to Morgan Harrington, who will be one of the featured singers this Sunday evening at the Palace of Fine Arts in San Francisco at 7 o'clock as the annual benefit concert Sing for America gets underway. Among special guests, Livingston Taylor, the Oakland Interfaith Gospel Choir, and the Hearts of Romaine, as well as several other well-known singers from the Bay Area. Some beautiful a cappella choral pieces will be involved, as well as some spirituals, gospel, Broadway, and pop. An evening to remember, indeed, if you go to singforamerica.org for more information. Do try to go Sunday night. Sunday night's a pretty open evening for people to catch things, I think. So
absolutely, and it's a fabulous place to bring family and to have the community come together.
Well, Morgan,
music.
thanks for coming in today, and you sound so beautiful. Very nice.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for sharing. One of the pieces that will be done as part of the concert on Sunday evening is the Make Our Garden Grow chorus from Candide, music of Leonard Bernstein. Let's go out with that here on a Thursday afternoon, Open Air. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks to Neil Swinkles for making things happen for Open Air. A reminder that all of our shows are excerpted and fully archived at our website, klw.org.
Moving on through the soil, I find my soul.
make our garden grow. From Candide, featured this Sunday evening as part of the choral extravaganza known as Sing for America, a fantastic benefit concert, Sunday evening at 7 o'clock. Information at singforamerica.org. Also, tuba player Zach Spellman is in recital tomorrow at SF State at 1 o'clock. Check him out, a good friend of KLW and of mine. Zach Spellman in concert tomorrow at 1. This is KLW San Francisco. An hour of news from the BBC is next. It's 2 o'clock.